Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
The enemy of the people, and they are.
It's a serious question.
I appreciate your passion. I share it. I've addressed this question. I've addressed my personal feelings.
And I want you all to know that we are fighting the fake news.
You're listening to Just Ask the Question, Adventures in Reporting with your host, Brian Karam.
Hi, it's Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam, and with us today is a young man I've known for quite a while, actually. I coached him in high school football in Rockville, Maryland, one of my linemen at the time, and he's gone on to a member of the IB program, more importantly, International Baccalaureate, and he finds himself with his girlfriend today in Ukraine. Joel Wasserman is with us. Joel, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Just quick clarification. So I am currently alone in Lviv. My girlfriend, and hopefully within the next, within the coming hours, her mom and her dog as well will be in a resort town called Yaremche in the Carpathian Mountains.
And you sent them there, or they decided to go there? What's the story behind that?
It's a hell of a story, I gotta tell you. I guess I'll go back and start all the way at the beginning.
Okay. Before you do that, we got to do our break to pay the bills. We're going to take a commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to go through all of it. So sit tight. It's Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam. We'll be right back.
Hey, Just Ask the Question podcast listeners. If you've got a second, head on over to Twitter and follow our official page, JATQ Podcast.
That's JATQ Podcast. Again, that's at JATQ Podcast.
Hi, we're back. It's Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam, and with me is Joe Wasserman, a former high school football player that I had the privilege to coach. It seems like many years ago, but it can't be that long ago, right?
Absolutely not.
So Joel is with us and is going to tell us a story. He's he moved to Ukraine to be with his girlfriend, and they're separated now. And you take me back to the beginning, Joel, before commercial break, we were talking about it.
Well, I mean, the story of why I'm here goes actually well back before I met my girlfriend. Why am I in Ukraine in the first place? I've been interested in this part of the world for a long time. And I, you know, decided to, when I went to college, I decided to study Russian. I did language study in Moscow in 2012. And after I finished my language studies in Moscow, I decided I really wanted to live in the Russian speaking world for a while to, you know, not just get my language skills down, but to understand the way life works in places like that. And then 2014 happened with the Euromaidan revolution, in which the Russian-backed authoritarian Viktor Yanukovych repressed protests against a decision to reject an association agreement with the European Union. It's a long story.
No, that's
long story short. It's long story short. There's a massive popular protest movement which kind of came together as, you know, a general rejection of the appalling corruption and, you know, lack of advancement that characterized Viktor Yanukovych's tenure. And how did Yanukovych respond to this? Well, he responded how the Russians told him to, which was to crack down brutally. It culminated in, I believe, what was it, February? Yes, February 20th, the day of the Heavenly Hundred, as it's called here in Ukraine, when over 100 protesters were cut down by bullets from government forces in the center of Kyiv. That was kind of the climax of the action of the Euromaidan revolution. The Yanukovych basically lost all support and negotiated a way for himself to get out and then fled the country. So after the Euromaidan happened, there was quite within almost a matter of hours began the Russian operation to annex Crimea. Within about a month, month and a half after that, my chronology might be a little bit off here.
That's right.
Began the Russian invasion of Donbass, which is a heavily industrial region in eastern and southeastern Ukraine. That began the Donbass War, which in its hottest phases was in 2014-2015. So I watched the Maidan unfolded from my college dorm room. I watched what unfolded summer of 2014, and I decided that I wanted to make myself useful in Ukraine somehow, that I didn't want to be in Russia, and that I really felt a calling to find some way to be useful over here. I graduated college in 2015. I spent time working. I spent time, you know, with an internship. I got a teaching certification because I decided what I wanted to do was come over here and teach English, particularly with veterans of the ATO, the anti-terrorist operation, as the war in Donbass is called. And so I...
Living in Kyiv?
I came over here in March 2018, and up until a month ago, I lived in Kyiv. Kyiv was my home base, and you know, I enjoyed traveling, but Kyiv was home.
Do you think that I want to go through what happened? All right, so let's start with your girlfriend. You met her. Why is she going to Carpathia?
So, Katya and I have been together for something over a year. So her story. To start with her story, I guess, you know, it's worth explaining kind of the beginning of the whole chapter of this saga of this war. Starting in January, I was really starting to, you know, become concerned with the indications that there could be some sort of major action. A few hours actually before the U.S. Embassy began advising Americans to start leaving Ukraine, I decided that it was a good idea to relocate to Lviv for a while. Because back then, I saw very compelling arguments on both sides of the will he, won't he argument. But the won't he arguments were just simply not compelling enough to risk myself.
Or won't he invade? You're talking about Putin?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you about that.
Sure.
How is the on the ground in Ukraine? What's the feeling towards Zelensky and then the feeling towards Putin? I get an inkling of the feeling towards Putin when you have people shouting at him to go fuck himself, and the Russians that get the fuck out of there. So I guess
it,
and it's
if you'll if you'll permit me a little bit of Russian and Ukrainian profanity, one of the most famous pro-Ukrainian expressions over here is Putin Khuylo, which I would translate as basically Putin is a fuckhead or a dickhead. And it started basically as a chant at soccer games, which was anyways. You can imagine how people feel about Putin, how people feel about Russia, how people feel about Zelensky. The man, I think that history will have to judge how he prepared Ukraine for this. Right. History will have to judge his actions, you know, as president before this. But right now, the man is a hero. The man refused evacuation out of the capital and oversaw the defense of this beautiful, ancient, and noble city to repel the Russian invader.
And we've seen reports of just people, normal citizens, taking up arms and defending their homeland. True?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is absolutely something people are doing. That is absolutely something I expected people to do. You know, Ukraine is a country with a rich, if very frustrating, political life, but, you know, this is people's home and they know their home is Ukraine and not, you know, just, and not as Russian vassals, and they will fight, they will die to make sure it stays that way.
Do you think that Ukraine will fall?
Depends what you mean by will Ukraine fall.
Will Ukraine would come under the governance of Russia? Will absorb Ukraine?
I think that eventually the heavy armor that Russia has been rolling in from the east is going to arrive in the capital. And while Kyiv will continue to spill the enemy's blood and oil all over its streets, it can't hold out forever.
Do you see
how much of Ukraine is going to become under de facto Russian occupation? I don't know. And you know, I really don't want to sound defeatist here, but you can look at the assessments that U.S. Intelligence has made about how this war would, about the fact that this war would start and how it would develop. And there are things that they've gotten right. There are things that they've gotten wrong. Well, the first timing. This is just kind of a gut feeling. I have no particular access,
right.
That they are surprised by the robustness and the effectiveness of Ukraine's defense. I have been surprised by the incompetence of Russia's operations. I've been seeing so many videos of Russian prisoners who have surrendered. Their morale must be, you know, just total shit. I've seen videos of captured tanks where the Ukrainian guys climb up on them and say, "Look at this shit. This is worse than ours." And these are the tanks of a superpower. And these guys are like, "What is this shit?" You know,
how is the Ukrainian military?
The Ukrainian military has the effectiveness of the Ukrainian military has surprised even me. As I said, I came over to Ukraine to teach veterans. And, you know, the students that I had, you know, these are hard guys, but, you know, they're professional guys. They're professional guys. And, you know, this is not the sort of, I guess the Russian army has a stereotype of, you know, where conscripts go for a year to be abused by drunken sergeants and literally, you know, mined the potatoes at the colonel's country house.
Right.
And that's the stereotype. And from what I've seen, that is the military that Russia has brought into battle against Ukraine. But Ukraine's military is confident. They are eager to kill the enemy. They are eager to do everything they can to defend their homeland.
Well, and that's what
they are doing a damn fine job.
This is defense. You would have to think the Russians, there's been a lot of protest in Russia. I don't know how dedicated the Russian military is to this, particularly with an intense amount of defense. But obviously, those who are defending their home are going to be much more compelled to stay the course. Yes?
Well, I don't know about a lot of protests in Russia, because they've really squelched down on any sort of dissent. Talking about Ukraine, Ukraine has said that they've killed about 3,500 Russian soldiers already. I believe that is more than died in the entire Second Chechen War, which lasted years in the early 2000s.
What are they reporting for casualties in Ukraine for Ukrainians?
That I haven't been able to get to keep track of. The day to day,
couple hundred, but
I'd guess it's hundreds to possibly thousands, because the Russians began this with a whole lot of missile bombardments all across the country on military facilities all over, and those had to do a number. But
But you've been, let's talk about the impression that you have that the Russians are a little inept in their invasion so far. You think they've been less than what was expected, not nearly the blitzkrieg that one expected?
Speaking without strong military expertise, and basically based on what I see from, following people with that expertise and from Telegram threads over here, yes, that would be my impression.
But they've yet to pull in the heavy armor.
They have yet to pull in the heavy armor. They have yet to pull in. I think they've yet to deploy all of their forces across the borders. They've yet to really bring in bomber aircraft. They've yet to achieve air superiority, which they've got to be embarrassed about.
Really?
Time is not on Ukraine's side, and
so tell me what you said today was a very difficult day. Walk me through what it's
today been. Was a hell of a day. I've gone down to the.
Let me explain for those who don't understand. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon on the East Coast. You are 5 hours ahead of us, so the sun
seven.
Has, 7 hours ahead of us. So the sun mm-hmm. has set. It's nearly 9 o'clock your time. And so walk me through what today has been like.
Okay. A few things I want to talk about. Number one, I've been down to the basement, which is basically the air raid shelter, 4 times today. I went down there, I think, twice yesterday. The first instance, as I understood, was a missile was flying towards a target in a region south of here, and the city could have possibly been on its path. And with a cruise missile, it's flying straight. You don't know where it's going to land until it turns down. So go to the air raid shelters. Today, I couldn't tell you what it's about. So I've already kind of gotten used to going to an air raid shelter. Another thing, the city is still calm. The city is still resilient. There are people who are leaving. I walk around the center and I see a significant number of people pulling suitcases. I see a significant number of people carrying grocery bags back home. Whether they're going or whether they're staying, people are calm. People have decided what they need to do that day. And tomorrow they're going to decide what they need to do that day, even they don't know what it's going to bring. the calm and grace under pressure here has made me so proud of this country, has made me.
Is there military feel, in the city where you are now?
There are what I understand internal security troops, more than yesterday, more security, internal security troops walking around the center than yesterday.
To put everybody in mind, where the battle is ongoing right now in Kyiv, and Kyiv has not fallen as we speak. That's about 6 hours east of you. Yes.
The train ride on a relatively fast train is about 5 to 6 hours. I have to look it up on Google Maps how many miles exactly, but it's, I want to say if Kyiv is like Buffalo, New York, then Lviv is roughly Chicago.
You were talking 400 or 500 miles, right?
Somewhere around those lines.
And so,
another thing that I want to talk about is that there is a very, people are calm, but there's a very serious security situation here. They are on the hunt for saboteurs. I received a notification from an official source that basically saboteurs had worked through, you know, real estate rentals to find places to deploy, and had, you know, been making markings around the city of objects to of objects and directions to sabotage. And for this reason,
these
when asked
Russian forces, yes,
pro-Russian saboteurs, yeah. Correct. That is why we're having a curfew, because if you're out on the street after 10 o'clock, you are going to be assumed a possible hostile target. This is why the landlord who I'm renting this apartment from was reluctant to let me host other people until I called him and he said, I need to see their documents first. And wow. So, yeah.
And so, I understand that they're resilient. I understand that people will fight. Is there any sense that do they feel that they will be triumphant, or do you get the sense that it's you know, like the Atticus Finch story, real courage is knowing you're licked but going ahead and fighting the fight anyway?
In the situation, that's a different question in Lviv and in Kyiv.
Well, let's Kyiv. You left Kyiv. How was it there?
I left Kyiv about a month ago. I mean, when reading social media posts from my friends, I don't think that they're speculating about what the final result of the battle will be. What they're talking about is how much this hurts and how angry they are.
Yeah.
And
is this going to be like a battle of the Alamo, or is there going to be troops to help out in Kyiv? Or are they just on their own?
There are trains frequently coming from Kyiv to the west. And if they want to get more of those trains, then the trains from the west have to come back.
No,
I'm afraid that's all I'm going to say.
Support troops to support and help the defense of Kyiv.
If trains leave Kyiv and keep leaving Kyiv, then some trains are going to have to come back. And I'm afraid that's all I'm going to say.
Okay. All right. And where you are now, same question.
I think that Russians advancing on Lviv is a much lower, I think, and I still hope, a relatively low probability possibility. If the Russians begin advancing on here, or the bombardments, number one, start, number two, become unbearable, that is the trigger at which I would leave.
Well, the question is, why wouldn't they? If they're going to take over the whole country, I mean,
this is the capital. Lviv is the capital, is the center of Western Ukraine. It is also the capital, the heartland of the Ukrainian nationalist movement, which in a history that is, you know, which you can literally, and people have written books about, included a fierce anti-Soviet resistance during and after World War II. People are proud of that lineage here. And if the Russians come here, they're gonna have to work real hard to find enough soldiers to pacify this area, because they will be hungry for blood.
It was from outside looking in. You had said the president Zelensky is a hero now. Were you surprised at the resilience of the people in Kyiv?
The people of Kyiv have made me so proud. People handled horrible bombardments and pitched battles last night in fear, but in an orderly way, going to the shelters, going into the metro. People have taken up arms, and I can't tell you civil resistance and how much is military, but the combined efforts have really done a number. The people of Kyiv made me so proud last night.
So let me jump to a couple other things before we go to a break here. One is, how are essentials, food chain, food supplies, gasoline, are they in decent supply where you are?
So I wouldn't know about gas because I don't have a gas station near me. I'm in basically the central area of downtown, a few hundred yards from where all the journalists are staying, which is why I'm confident I'm pretty safe, because they're not going to risk killing a CNN person, are they?
Oh, yeah.
yeah,
don't fool yourself.
Hey,
are you kidding? They want to kill us, but that's another story.
Oh, Lord. I went to get some groceries today. Hard durable grains like buckwheat and rice were in short supply. The meat was relatively, a great selection. There was a good selection of, ready to eat non-perishable foods like chips, cookies,
and are people
bars.
Are people hoarding those or doubling down?
No, there were not. I mean, I got in, filled my basket, got out, no problem. I am, however, worried.
In this country, if we have a snow, you can't find toilet paper on the shelves.
and not only that, but it is a violation of your constitutional rights and all of Jesus's promises. Hey. So, different grocery stores between yesterday and today, but not as good a selection today. But I was in and out, no problem.
Have you seen any inflationary trends? Is it more difficult to, are the prices going up?
The price of the dollar is definitely going up. I honestly haven't been out. I honestly don't have the reference points to tell you about inflation. I suppose I could look on my taxi app, and that would give me a good sense. But
yeah.
Well,
let me hit one other issue before we go to break here.
Sure.
And that is, you were talking about going up and down in air raid shelters. You all are preparing for, or have to be prepared for, some sort of military operation. Is there any indication that the operation against Ukraine is widening from the Russians, or do you have a sense of that where you are now?
Widening beyond Ukraine?
I mean, widening to more than, I know most of it is centered around Kyiv, but other places in Ukraine.
So the whole Eastern Bank of the whole Eastern Bank of the Dnipro except Donbass, which was the whole pretext for this, as right. I understand. Well, as I understand, basically everywhere except Donbass is under huge fire, not counting the village of the town of Shastya right on the front lines, which I've heard the Russians have leveled by 80%.
And they took Chernobyl, and
They have been conducting strikes on military targets in Western Ukraine. I have heard of reports of fighting in Lutsk, which is in the northwestern part of the country on the border with both Poland and Belarus. But as I understand, that action has not been particularly intense. West Central, places like Ivano-Frankivsk, Ternopil, Khmelnytsky, as far as I know, those have been quite very quiet. Lviv, I mean, there has to be a reason that the air sirens are going off, but I don't know what it is.
Right.
But I don't think that by the military analysis I've read, they are, you know, basically trying to make a sweep down from the Belarusian border down to a central Ukrainian city called Zhytomyr and kind of sweep east and control the areas.
Like a pincer.
East of that. Well, I mean,
from the west and the east and the north.
Right? And the south from Crimea.
Well, we're going to stop here and take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk more. And when we do, Joel, tell me what life was like in Kyiv before you left. We'll be right back.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. We're talking to you, and we need your help. Seriously. As you probably know, independent journalism is a vital pillar of our democracy. Like everything else, it's not free. We're asking all longtime listeners of the show to help support us by becoming a member on Patreon. For the price of a latte, you can help guard democracy. Join us today at patreon.com/JATQ podcast to help us keep bringing you the podcast you love and the facts you deserve.
Hi, we're back. It's Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam. And while I'm sitting comfortable in my suburban D.C. home, I'm talking with Joel Wasserman, who is a former high school football player I had the privilege of coaching years ago. And he is stuck in an apartment in Ukraine. And while we were in the break, Joel, you heard from your girlfriend, and she and her mother are on the way to a beachside location. Is everything all right?
So not beachside. Oh, God, beach. It's not safe right now. Okay, she is currently in a mountain resort town called Yaremche. Her mom, she got there last night after one hell of a trek. Her mom is on her way on the train there now. And you know, if you'd like, we can talk about that story.
Yeah, that is. Are they okay? Let's go with that first. Are they both all right, as far as you know?
They are.
That's what a lot of people are going to know, is everybody okay? Then secondly, tell me a little bit, while we talk, how would you know if you had another air raid warning?
So,
I mean, are there loudspeakers you would hear, or?
The unfortunate thing is that I am in a building which is kind of like in a courtyard off the street. So my ability to hear the street is somewhat limited, which is why I've got to keep the windows open all the time, even though it's cold. My most reliable way of getting information about go to an air raid shelter is from the telegrams of official sources in Lviv, like from the mayor and from the city council.
What's the temperature and weather like where you are?
My computer tells me right now it is -2 degrees Celsius, so just a little bit below freezing.
And tell me now, before the break, we talked about the last month. You left about a month ago from Kyiv. Mm-hmm. What was the preparation? This has been ongoing for a while. What was the preparation like for where we are now in Kyiv, say 6 to 8 weeks ago? Were they actively taking this seriously, or was it just thought to be Russian bombast?
It was frustrating the level of nonchalance I saw both in, you know, the people I knew and frankly, the Ukrainian government, because, you know, you had Zelensky very publicly pressuring the U.S. Okay, you say they're coming. Number one, show me the evidence. Number two, okay, give me the weapons or you know, impose the sanctions already. It was a surreal time. I think almost everybody in this country was very surprised when this happened, because no, they thought that Putin couldn't be this crazy. He couldn't be this stupid. We hate him. We'd never welcome him as a liberator. We'd never accept him. We'd never recognize a government he imposed as legitimate. He's not stupid. He wouldn't try to do that. Maybe, you know, there'll be some, you know, escalation from the occupied territories. Maybe, you know, they'll try to, you know, take a little bit out to make a land bridge to Crimea, something like that. But I think the full-fledged invasion caught people very much by surprise. So going back to, I guess, you know,
Before we go to that story.
Yeah.
Daniel, all right, you all, so the preparations, no one really thought that it would be like this. How have the people reacted to the international community supporting Ukraine? Do they think it's enough? Do they think it's not enough? Are they happy with what
it depends on the person, depends on the country you're asking about.
Well, let's start.
A lot of my friends in the civil society sector have been very frustrated that, you know, okay, you said that this would trigger devastating sanctions on Russia. Okay, where are they? And when you see the EU trying to negotiate a sanctions package, which includes, you know, cutouts for diamonds and luxury goods, you know what kind of message that sends. On the other hand, my understanding is that today momentum has shifted on that significantly. And governments in the West are coming to an agreement on sanctions that will be severely, severely devastating for Russia.
So is it a matter of too little too late, or do people there think that it would be effective, or there's still hope?
You have Zelensky calling upon the nations of the world to stop this. You had an address from Kyiv mayor and famous boxer Vitali Klitschko in English, you know, calling upon the world to make this stop.
You know, but Putin is saying that, you know, it's that Zelensky is a Nazi sympathizer, and that the government is oppressing its people. Now, that's been called as bullshit by pretty much anyone around the world, including President Joe Biden. But I mean, is there any inkling of truth to that, or is that just a total fabrication?
So the language that I mostly speak with my girlfriend is Russian. The language that I start out conversations with over here is Russian. I speak in the language that I'm spoken to, but my default language is Russian because it's the one that I know best and I'm most comfortable with. Kyiv is in the pre-war time was, in my estimation, about a 60%, 40% Russophone city. Even in the more strongly Ukrainophone West, I have never had any problem, with using whichever language I wanted whenever I damn well pleased, except for one time when I was in a restaurant and it was a drunken asshole who promptly got thrown out. The idea of Russian speakers being oppressed in this country is, I mean, it's mind-bendingly false to anybody who has spent any time in this country and is capable of speaking in people's everyday languages.
Right.
I mean, even here, I hear when I'm sitting down in the shelter with people from Kyiv and from Lviv, I'm hearing both languages. So it's right. I want your viewers to understand the idea of Russian speakers' rights being oppressed. I mean, Ukraine has been trying to cultivate the use of Ukrainian as the official state language and has been has been trying to elevate Ukrainian into a preferred status in public life, as an oppressed people for hundreds of years under Russian imperialism. You know, it's of course they want to promote their own language, but people can speak any damn language they damn well please in this country. The idea of Russian speakers being oppressed, complete fiction. I don't know how else to say it.
Well, that's a great way to say it. So let's move on. You want to tell a story of your girlfriend up in the mountain resort?
Let's do that. So yeah. As I said, I came over to Lviv about a month ago the triggers for me to do that was the lack of seriousness of Russian diplomacy and the fact that, you know, they weren't offering any sort of ground that the Americans could possibly, you know, work with. And the fact that, you know, they were building up a whole lot of forces, a large portion of their military that you don't just stick there to take a leak over the border.
Right.
So
you saw it coming.
I saw something coming. I was still shocked when they bombed Kyiv the first night. I mean, America said that was gonna. The American intelligence said that was gonna happen, but I guess, naively thought they wouldn't do that, and they did. Yeah,
and the American intelligence turned out to know what they're talking about.
Hallelujah, hallelujah! It did. So I made that decision, and I kind of at that time made the decision for both of us without asking her, which was not fair of me. And she resented that, rightfully so. We had that conversation and, you know, I tried to explain to her, this specifically is why I've come to the decision, why I've come to the conclusion that this is a good idea. Okay, there's the military, there's the political elements of it, but fundamentally, the risk is significant. Rent by Western standards out here is quite cheap. Having an extra rent to pay for a little while was not going to break me. Getting out early ensured that I was able to take a whole lot of my stuff, and it ensured that I was able to take my cat quite easily. It ensured that I was able to get an apartment that I liked, that to have a seat on the train, and you know feel safe and you know detached from the atmosphere of Kyiv, somewhat. She stayed a few. So she didn't come with. She didn't come right with me. She came a few days afterwards.
And her mother lives in Kyiv, or did
her mother? Yeah, her mother lives in Kyiv.
To see her daughter now.
So she's getting out to her daughter now. She's getting out to Katya now.
You all planning to meet up there or where you are?
I don't know yet. I'm going to see how the situation. So they have a place for a while in Yaremche. I'm going to see what things look like this week, over the course of the week.
So as we close, the one thing I do want to get to as we close is that of hope, or is there any hope that that Ukraine will survive independently, A, and B, how long do you think this this ground war will go on?
A, Ukraine will survive. Its territorial boundaries are very much up in the air. How long will the ground war go on? I'm going to have to defer you to people with far better expertise than I have. A, Ukraine will survive, whether it's centered in Lviv or whether it's centered in a nationwide partisan resistance movement. The opening line of the Ukrainian national anthem, Shena vmerla Ukraini, ni slava, ni volya. Ukraine has not yet perished, neither her glory nor her will. And that will always be true. And there was a video that I watched last night from the city of Sumy out by the Russian border in the east. As you know, there was gunfire crackling in the distance. Somebody was playing the final parts of the Ukrainian national anthem on a trumpet, but it was just such a powerful moment of pride, of defiance, of resistance. I tear up every time I watch it. Душу і тіло ми положимо за нашу свободу і покажемо, що ми браття козацького роду. Our souls and our bodies, we will lay down for our freedom, and we will show brothers that we are of Cossack blood.
Those Cossacks.
I mean, translate it, blood, family, lineage. Indulge me some poetic license.
Yeah. So indulged. Joel, I want you to stay safe, brother. Be safe where
I
you
will.
Are.
Thank you.
And we'll stay in touch and let me know how things go and if there's anything we can do to help. I know there's humanity.
If I could make a final appeal to your viewers, this country is going to need massive amounts of humanitarian support. Please ask your representatives to mobilize immediate and effective aid to help the people who are evacuating at the border, to help maintain the economic, help maintain some semblance of an economy in this country, get food here, get fuel here, get blood. There's probably going to be a COVID explosion because everybody's spending so much time in shelters. And please call upon the representatives of your government to accept Ukrainian refugees.
Thank you, Joel. I appreciate it, brother. We'll put the word out and we'll stay in touch. And you, like I said, be safe.
Will do.
Thank you for having me. This is Just Ask the Question. I am your host, Brian Karam. It's been a very special time, Joel. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
In this modern age of misinformation and deceit, Just Ask the Questions newsletter cuts through the BS and gets to the truth. With Brian's in-depth articles, columns, and exclusive content not released anywhere else. Get the scoop and stay in the know. Sign up for the Just Ask the Question newsletter now at substack.com/JATQ podcast. In this modern age of misinformation and deceit, Just Ask the Questions newsletter cuts through the BS and gets to the truth. With Brian's in-depth articles, columns, and exclusive content not found anywhere else. Get the scoop and stay in the know. Sign up for the Just Ask the Question newsletter now at substack.com patreon.com/JATQ podcast.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.